I think the world's going to change track now from the traditional kind of EU-driven approach of basically forcing people to decarbonize to actually building technology so good, people want to decarbonize in their own self-interest.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Director of Media at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders, past, present, and emerging. One of our top 10 episodes last year was the one on sustainable finance education, featuring CFA Institute's Chief Product Advocate, Rob Langrick. That episode was aired just weeks before the US election, and there have been some dramatic changes in the world of sustainable investing since. So we thought we'd ask Rob again to give us an update on CFA Institute's program. Has it changed? Why or why not? So, Rob, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
First, give us a lay of the land. Where in the CFA program, from level one to level three, do you cover educational material on sustainable finance or sustainable investing?
So we cover sustainable finance and investing really all throughout the three levels of the CFA program. And so we follow what we call the PEPA method, where it's peppered through. So when you think about it, when you think about the asset classes like fixed income, for instance, or equities, well, for equities, you need to look at things like governance, make sure that's sustainable. For fixed income, you look at things like green bonds. So we don't have one silo where we cover sustainability, but instead we kind of put it all throughout. We have a process called practice analysis where we make sure that our curriculum is up to date with current practices. That's an ongoing process. And then we have annual curriculum releases, which will take into account the changes in the marketplace. So that's the way our curriculum updating works. I will say that we're now thinking a bit more broadly about sustainability, however, because when you look at what's been happening the last few months in particular, you realize that very long-term investors, that will include many superannuation funds in Australia, by the way, along with sovereign wealth funds like the biggest one in the world up in Norway, they cannot ignore the risks to the sustainability of earnings, which can come from governance issues, can come from climate, and so on. So in that respect, nothing has changed. In the short term, however, a lot has changed.
Yes, indeed. So, for example, on March 12, Lee Zeldin, the head of Environmental Protection Agency, said that the U.S. government plans to roll back 13 environmental laws that had been supported by the previous U.S. government. How would that impact, let's say, those who intend to take up the level one of the CFA program this year?
Yes, I mean, when we look at the environment itself, as one thing I didn't mention, it has definitely not changed. The carbon dioxide levels keep rising, as do temperatures measured by the Copernicus satellite. So that continues. The poles continue to melt along with the alpine glaciers and so on. But the other fire happening is actually a bonfire of regulations, which has really started to happen since November of last year. So if we look at, it's not just what's happening in March 2025, it's what's been happening really since the fall of 2024. So, you know, the United States was in again, in, then out, then in, then now out again from the Paris Accords, meaning that they no longer subscribe to keeping temperatures below 1.5 to 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels. They suspended subsidies for electric vehicles. Airlines are now questioning whether to move forward with sustainable aviation fuel, for instance. So lots of changes in America beyond the ones you mentioned, which are coming in March. But what's really interesting is that no country is an island. And so for various reasons, Europe, which has historically been the standard bearer for climate action, they've been forced by various phenomena, certainly Trump 2.0, but also the situation in Ukraine. They're being forced to prioritize now. So voters are really in no mood to pay extra for things related to reducing carbon emissions. And also there's a push to maintain competitiveness of European corporations with the USA corporations. So even there, you're seeing a more miniature, but nonetheless a bonfire of regulations. So for instance, there's the ambitious CSRD disclosure directive, which is designed to force companies to disclose things such as carbon emissions all the way down to smaller companies. That's now being softened in Europe. there's talk about pushing back the internal combustion engine car ban from 2035, for instance. And even a company like Siemens in Germany is really pointing out to the EU, this is one of Europe's biggest companies, by the way, that the burden of climate action is disproportionate to the benefit. And of course, voters are along for the ride because there's a cost of living crisis happening, in particular in Europe. I think that's somewhat of a global phenomenon, although not entirely. I was actually in Australia in November, shortly after being on your show in the fall of 2024. I found a strong support for climate action among the superannuation funds that I spoke to when I was there, which was interesting. And in China, really, that leads continues to lead the way in terms of climate action and what have you. That being said, the nationally determined contributions, the NDCs, were due in February 2025, when the companies had to refresh their promises in terms of carbon emission reduction. China, India, and the European Union were all late to do that. So I do think that the bonfire of regulations has spread quite significantly. You now had a company even as big as British Petroleum tear up its net zero plan on the back of activists. So a lot has changed since we last spoke.
Goodness me. And it's under a year that all of these have really kind of come to a head, if you like. Now, moving away from regulation, let's talk about innovation. What's new in sustainable finance that you've included or perhaps looking to include in the next few years?
So this is when I'm going to switch from doom and gloom to optimism. So I think the historic tack with climate action has been top-down regulation. And the dream has always been to have a tax on carbon to make people who emit carbon pay the cost of doing so. I think that you're now seeing a big change happening around the world where voters don't want to do that, essentially. So anything that involves top-down without the clear mandate from voters or asset owners is sort of going past its sell-by date. So things such as net zero are now being questioned. Certainly carbon tax is being questioned. Will there ever be a carbon tax? We'll have to wait and see. However, here's the good news story. I think the reason there was top-down push to reduce carbon emissions is because the technology was more expensive, or the ways and means to do that were more expensive than using fossil fuels. Think about what happened on the 17th of March in 2025. BYD in China announced they're about to come out with a car that has a full charge in 5 minutes. So all of a sudden, these technologies are getting so good that actually it's in your own self-interest that you decarbonize as opposed to being told to do so by a government. In Japan, they're leading innovators in solar. They're leading the charge on perovskite, which is 20 times thinner than normal solar panels, which will enable mass adoption of solar around the world. There's innovation in mini nuclear reactors, which will be essential for driving the AI revolution. There's innovation in battery storage technology. And if we can master that, then you can solve this kind of daytime, nighttime problem that you have with solar. You can't store the energy for use at night. So these are the good news stories. So I think the world's going to change track now from the traditional kind of EU-driven approach of basically forcing people to decarbonize to actually building technology so good, people want to decarbonize in their own self-interest.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's a better motivation and perhaps a more powerful motivation that is aligned with what you've just said about the cost of living crisis and how people's finances do impact their decisions. Now, anything else you'd like to share regarding CFA Institute and what it's currently doing in this space?
Yeah, so we're committed to sustainability education. So we have not only the CFA program where we teach sustainability and have done, we've had governance in there since back in the 1990s, but also we have the Sustainable Investing Certificate. And we have the Climate Risk Valuation and Investing Certificate as well, which goes deep on really the E piece. So we have not one, not two, but three offerings. And I talk to clients all the time, so depending on how deep you want to go. We've got a range of options from the big one, which is the CFA program, 9,000 pages, to sustainable investing, all the way down to the climate risk, all you want to do is focus on climate. So we're finding interest really around the world. It's really interesting looking geographically. Yeah, Asia really leads the way. Asia Pacific leads the way in terms of clean energy. And we're certainly seeing that in terms of candidate interest.
Amazing. Rob, thank you once again for joining us.
My pleasure.
This is The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar. Thank you for listening.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.